The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film, 1,000 feet, 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everyone.
Welcome back to the World of Bears podcast. I am Michael.
I'm Rob Strachan.
This week on the show, it's Killers of the Flower Moon week. I don't think anybody marked that on their calendars, but it is. It's. Are you excited for Killers of the Flower Moon?
I am, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know the story at first. Isn't there like a name for that story?
I'm not sure, but all I know is it takes place in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Right around the time where they discovered a lot of oil there, and it's just about kind of the infighting between, the indigenous people there and, the quote unquote, I guess we'll refer to them as like the settlers or something.
Yeah.
But I think it takes place in the early 1900s, like 19 teens or something like that.
Yeah. It's in the last 100 years, yeah. I think, which is kind of weird.
I mean, there's cars.
Yeah. Right. There's auto.
Is it Wild West on horses or is it, kind of like
horsepower?
Is it post kind of 1910?
I like that he's making these big 3-hour epics. I'm fine with it. Like,
so am I.
Everybody wants to chew him
as long as it's not The Irishman.
Yeah, exactly. Which we'll talk about soon. But
like his average runtime has got to be what, 2.5 to 3 hours?
I think he hovers in the 2 to 2:20 mark. Most movies, I think.
Really?
I feel like
they're longer, man.
Maybe
Goodfellas
like
longer
that,
than that.
Yeah.
Casino's longer than that.
Wolf of
Wall Street's a relatively newer movie of his. It's longer. It's 2.5 hours.
It's almost 3. I think it's 2:50.
Yeah. Yeah.
2:45, 2:48, whatever. Yeah. If you want to get like super, super mathematical about it. But by the end of this episode, Rob and me want to preface here by saying that this top 10 list that we're going to make, by no means are neither of us married to it. It's just how we're feeling on a fucking Wednesday. So we know that some movies may have been forgotten. We know that some movies may not have any sort of conversation about them today. That does not make them any.
Some of them we may never have seen.
Exactly.
Or we only saw part of it. Or I saw it so long ago, it doesn't resonate with me anymore because it just doesn't.
There's 100 reasons why some of these films never made it. So if we do this again, it's probably going to change, but this is just what Rob and me came up with based on our feelings today. So before we get to it, we just want to let listener know we have some shit coming up. We figured out our Comic-Con panel, which we're looking forward to. This one, we're doing a true high school style debate where there's going to be a moderator, which is me. We're going to have two teams, team Stark Industries and team Wayne Enterprises.
Hell yeah.
And we're going to have a 3-on-3 debate on which is better, Marvel or DC. Who's hitting more home runs now? Who's still doing it hard in the comics? Is their screen universe working? All these things and more will be asked in this debate. It's going to get rowdy. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you've seen our panels in the past, you know that they can get a little out of hand. So this one, we hope, we'll stay within the confines of the agreement we signed with Comic-Con. But nonetheless, we're going to have a good time. That's October 28th at Comic-Con in the Pan Am room. We were just saying the other day, we've done the auditorium, right?
Yeah.
And we did like a conference room. Now we're doing the Pan Am room. I think we're destined to be on main stage soon.
Maybe.
Maybe.
It's a possibility.
I think we can tell you. Yeah, we can tell you who the teams are. So Team Marvel, Team Stark Industries, is going to be Dan and Emily, the husband and wife team, with Charles, because that just makes fucking sense. And then Team DC is going to be Jimmy, Mark, and Rob.
DC for life.
Anyways, we hope to see you there. And then on, what is it, October 31st, Halloween night.
Ow!
Beetlejuice Bingo is what we're doing.
Beetlejuice.
That's what you got to say when you win, I think, right?
Yeah, totally.
So
that should be it. You have to stand up and yell Beetlejuice's name 3 times.
And then Dan can come running out from behind dressed as Beetlejuice. And
is that the plan?
It is now. Beetlejuice Bingo, what does that entail? Little Brown Jug's doing spooky movies all October, each and every Tuesday night, and they've asked us if we would come and host, and we wanted to make it a little bit more fun than just watching a movie. So we're going to try to do some trivia with you guys beforehand. If you show up early, there might be 10 questions of Beetlejuice and Tim Burton related trivia, and then you're going to get a bingo card. Pay $5, get a bingo card. That bingo card may or may not be a winner to a $25 gift certificate and 2 free tickets to our next trivia night at Little Brown Jug as well. So if you want to watch a free movie and gamble with the Real Debaters and play some bingo, October 31st, a movie's going to start, I guess, when movies start outside, which is when the sun goes down. Follow us in the show notes. Follow Little Brown Jug for more information about that. And in the show notes, there's a link to buy tickets right now for that, for your bingo ticket. So I believe it's one ticket, one bingo card per person. We wanted to make it so a lot of people could play, and we're not a casino. So I think that's about it.
Bring your dabbers.
So let's do what we do. What'd you watch this week?
I'm gonna stick with two movies I saw.
Okay.
So I went and saw The Creator.
Yes.
What did you think? I liked it a lot.
Right.
Yeah. I went with my wife actually, and
nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I mean, I would give it a solid 6.5 to 7 out of 10. I'm just gonna put that rating out there right away. I loved the look, the feel. I love the world. I love the near future, you know, dystopian take. It's
totally.
Very, very contemporary with all the AI stuff that's kind of been going around.
And it was grounded. It wasn't like too out there for AI.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't too crazy outlandish. It was, I think it's about 130, 140 years in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. Right. And
sure.
You know, I don't know. I just, the CGI was on fucking point. The
motion cap was great. There wasn't a lot of blur.
You know, the fact that the budget was like so minuscule compared to these giant monstrosities.
I love that you posted that.
That are just fucking so shitty. Like there's CGI.
How much did it cost again?
There's like $68 million or something like that.
80 all in, I read. After
with marketing, with marketing,
no, marketing's probably another 20, but eight. Let's just call it
like,
eight,
dude, that's,
80
that's,
to make that
that's,
is
that's,
cheap.
That's fucking impressive, right? And you know, like that's like a 20. That's like a 2009 budget, 2008 budget, right?
Did you see the clip of him talking about the camera he used?
No, what did he use?
It's a Sony. I don't know. It's a Sony numbered camera, but it's a $4,000 camera.
Oh,
it's
nice.
What like an average filmmaker could probably afford.
Yeah.
And he gets called out on a red carpet.
So he didn't film it in 8K. He only filmed it in 4K. Eh? Interesting. Okay. I would have thought they filmed it
I'll
in 8K.
Find you the clip and send it to
no,
you.
No, that's like, that's totally fair.
He totally nerds out on the red carpet about color science and what the camera like he's like the camera can make you look like a Kodak photo.
Totally.
Like the tones of the skin match the environment. And then like I saw that clip before I saw the movie and was like, holy shit, he's right. Like I would have never noticed that. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, and I mean I felt like the movie needed to be a little bit longer. I felt like the last half hour of the movie was really rushed.
I agree.
It wasn't sussed out. It wasn't developed. You were like, okay, I see how it's all working together, but it's gone too quick in this last little bit. And
they packed a lot in there in the third act.
Yeah, and I feel like the studio stepped in and said, this movie can't be 3 hours, but it kind of needed to be. And
well, it was this really cool, well-paced story that you got buried in, and then you got sped up in the third act.
Yeah, it needed an extra half hour, and I think if it pulled it out a little bit better, there was a few other scenes in the second act and that needed to be kind of shortened, or it could have been cut, and then other stuff needed to be added, especially like how like suddenly they saw the mom at the end and like
that was too
rushed.
It was just
I don't know, that's just the way I felt.
Well, okay, we put the mom in the end, spoiler alert listener, we put the mom in the end who ends up being an AI essentially, and which is
no, I thought it was cool though how you could download somebody's consciousness into like basically a USB drive essentially, and then they basically took it and uploaded it into an AI body.
So it is you, but it's not you, but your brain has to come to terms with the fact that you're you again, but it's not you. Like that's a conundrum.
But here's the thing, right? It was a biological replication that's AI
replicant, if you might say.
sort of in that respect, right? It looked just like her. It was the same size, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But obviously, it wouldn't have the same biological limitations of the human body.
You're enhanced,
and they basically have uploaded her entire memory and consciousness from her living self into this new vessel.
I was so into it very fast. Like when they give you the story right quick in the first like 10, 15 minutes and they catch you up with everything about how this is what's going on and you find out he's an undercover op and it's like I loved how they move through time about how they're like robots were in the 50s and then they advanced through the 60s and 70s and then they became a part of their society. Very iRobot, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the nuke drops and I'm like, well, that made a point. And like that's exactly what would happen. He made it feel like one day the robots would just make up their mind and they wouldn't give you a warning.
But then they find out later that it wasn't even...
It was a fucking coding error.
It was a coding error, so it was actually a human error. It wasn't AI. It was a human error.
Did you see... Like, I didn't look at where it was shot, but it looks like it was shot somewhere in like Thailand or like,
it had that feel. It had that feel that was in Southeast Asia, like Cambodia, Thailand,
Indonesia.
Because
they did talk a lot about
Indonesia.
Japan and China and stuff in the movie, but like they never confirmed where that house was.
I felt like it was kind of like in southern China.
Okay.
Yeah.
On like a beach island or some shit.
Like near, like just north of like Hong Kong, like in that area.
Fair enough.
Which is very kind of subtropical, kind of tropical, and has like the cool mountains and all that kind of feel.
I thought it was a lot more violent.
Than it needed to be.
Than it needed to be. And but I was also not bothered by it. I was just surprised.
Michelle was though.
Okay.
So she was off put by it. She said she kind of liked the story, but she felt like it was overly violent when it was violent. And I said, I think it was trying to convey a certain appeal, but I think that could have been dialed back a bunch and it still would have had the same impact. And actually it probably would have made the film have a better feel and flow.
I agree with you. Like some of the kill scenes, some of the bones breaking, some of the blood and the violence. I was just like, for Disney, this is a lot. I really didn't like that third act. It stuck out. It felt like we were just like trying to close too many loops here.
Totally.
But in the end, I mean, John David Washington fucking nailed it as that character.
Fuck, he's so good, man.
What did you think of like the cool bionics that they're using, right? Like how he can put his arm on and then like, just like some of that, like again, $80 million for a budget.
Yeah.
And you get that product. It's the District 9 success.
The reality, you know, what it basically shows is that some of these big movies are so reliant on the CGI and there's so much CGI that has to go into every scene that what they're doing is they're forgetting about using real stuff in conjunction with the CGI.
It's all blue or green screen and a boulder.
And they did it a better way, I think. I think they used a lot of real scenes, a lot of practicals, and you know, and then added the CGI where it absolutely needed to go in a tasteful way.
Complimentary, not relying on.
Totally. They also had a good kind of gritty filter in a lot of scenes.
Did it have,
so it allowed them to get away with a little bit, right? And it gave them a little bit more grace.
What'd you think of that tracking ship?
The tracking ship was dope, man. What was the name of it again?
Something Dread, I think.
No, it was
The Mod?
No. Yeah, it's some other name. I can't remember right now. I'm brain farting. But they said it was worth $1 trillion.
It took like 10 years to make.
10 years to make, cost $1 trillion to build.
No, I was real. I didn't do a trailer. I didn't do a trailer. I mean,
I did a trailer.
You kept talking about this trailer and how excited you were for it. Yeah. And I was like, I'm just gonna lean back on
this.
Had
a cool feel.
And didn't watch it. And then went in and was like, okay, I agree with your. I agree. Like seven what? Seven.
Yeah.
Seven.
I'd say
bionic arms.
Yeah, six and a half, seven. You know, seven. Yeah, out of 10 for sure.
Yeah.
It was good. I mean, how do you think it compared against Spielberg's AI?
Okay.
There's a lot of analogous stuff between the two, though.
I mean, everything that has to do with AI at some point crosses over and blends in with each other because it's a theoretical science right now.
Totally.
Right?
Like totally.
I mean, we have robots that can feed off of things and use an algorithm, but it's still theoretical for artificial intelligence to truly exist.
Well, like, to hit the singularity and all that kind of stuff and actually be self-aware, right?
You know? I mean, everything is usually the doomsday aspect. It's the Terminator 2 stuff. It's the machines take over.
It can get out of control. There's got to be the right restrictions put in place. I listened to Sam Altman on Joe Rogan this past week.
Okay.
And it was pretty interesting. That's the guy who started OpenAI and ChatGPT.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get his thoughts on stuff. Though, with Spielberg and AI, that's more ethical. That's more about the ramifications of it, where I think the creator and everything else that plays with AI, even like Westworld and stuff, is always about like the violent, bloody end, you know?
Yeah.
And that's more interesting. And that's probably where the studio stepped in and packed that third act into way too much shit. Cause they're like, we need a bigger ending here. Cause you can always wow them in the end, right? You can always rely on that last 20. Anyways, what was the other thing you watched?
The other thing I watched was on Netflix. I watched Reptile with Benicio del Toro.
And what's her face from Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah.
What the hell? Alicia Silverstone's in it. And Justin Timberlake is in it.
Justin Timberlake was okay.
Yeah?
I mean,
what's the premise? I just keep seeing it.
The premise is, it's basically, it's your classic detective movie with a sprinkle of small town police corruption.
Okay. How's Benicio?
He was good.
Yeah?
I mean, listen, was it the greatest movie I've ever seen? No. Was it based on a decent murder mystery thriller? Absolutely. Did it capture my interest the whole time? Yeah. Did it have a couple good twists? A couple. Was it still predictable? Yeah. Did I enjoy it? Yes. Was it like the greatest fucking movie I've ever seen? No. But it was, at least it made me think. At least it was dialogue driven. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, I've been meaning to just give it a go.
Yeah.
And see what it does.
Yeah.
You didn't want to turn it off? You didn't pick up your phone after 20 minutes?
No, I put my phone away so I could just pay attention the whole time.
All right.
Yeah.
How many Sicarios?
It's definitely not Sicario good. I would give it a solid six.
Six?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you got a couple hours and you want to watch just like a decent thriller that, you know, that's kind of cop driven and, you know, has an okay cast, it's a good little movie.
Does it seem like, when I say mechanical, I mean designed to elicit an effect, like it's a Netflix, here's your Sunday conveyor belt.
No, it's based on a novel.
Okay.
It's got good pacing and good timing, and it's.
But it gets lost in the other sevens of every thriller, detective, corrupt cop movie that you could.
Yeah, like about. I mean, I've seen several other movies with a similar type story, not exactly this, but different elements that have all been drawn into this that is similar in a way.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is
it entertaining in a time right now where there isn't a lot of
there's so much entertainment.
Where there isn't a lot of direct movies on streaming?
Yeah.
Yes. If you want to watch a movie.
Okay.
If you don't want to get into a TV series.
I feel that that's where my I'm lost in a field of series. When I loved being lost in a field of movies, I feel that
there's too many TV. There's too many fucking TV shows right
there's
now.
There's so many shows and the golden age of television. Yeah, okay.
There's too much Marvel.
Don't blow it inside
there's
of
too
five
much
years.
Star Wars. I can't keep up and I'm overwhelmed by it all.
Yeah,
and it's actually making me complacent and not give a fuck.
Okay, well, let me tell you about Talk to Me. Have you heard about this movie?
Like, if anything, the writer's strike and the actor's strike, I hope,
sour taste in your mouth.
I actually hope that it actually tightens up the amount of projects being made. And we actually...
Good point.
And they,
sure.
And we need a little survival of the fucking fittest here. And we need to see some shit go away.
Yeah.
Because there's too
well,
much...
everybody was getting a TV show for a while.
There's too much mediocrity being built right now. There's too many... There's too many B-level fucking celebrities now
on TikTok, but yeah,
they're just
I know what you're
but you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like they're, you know, like I want to return to fucking movie stars. I need to see some more fucking
you
Tom
Travolta's.
I need some more fucking Tom Cruise. I need some more actors that only do fucking movies.
Oh, wow. You want the small screen.
I want the small screen to take a little bit of a back seat right now. I'm wanting a resurgence of the cinema. It deserves it.
And
after COVID, it fucking deserves it.
It does, because it wasn't as crushed, I don't think. Like, the series still had a place to go, right? And I think that's what's caused this,
yeah.
Is that during COVID, they say it, they had all of our eyes. They had every one of us because we needed something to fucking dull the pain, to take us away from the monotony of every day.
And direct to streaming movies, fuck off.
Stay away. You ruin. I mean, and I know people got to take
really,
the work and
really
do the work.
I really, really wish
stuff,
Netflix would start releasing some of this stuff in the theater.
Yeah, I do.
And
too.
Then put it on Netflix
I'm
2 weeks later.
It. I am truly, genuinely
feeling... Grey Man should have been in the fucking theater.
That's
Extraction should have been in the fucking theater.
Extraction is 100% a action theater movie.
Like, I need to see that in a fucking movie theater with Atmos.
I love Extraction.
Yeah.
When you said you watched it the first time, like 2 years ago, I was like, okay, fine, whatever, I'll get to that. Never did. And then I was like, Rob said this was really good. I watched it. I watched Extraction 2 right after it. Like, I spent the whole day with Hemsworth. It was...
Yeah.
It's such an underrated action movie. And their little fucking throw to John Wick in the second one when he's doing that Steadicam shot and they're in the yard and everything's blowing up around him and it's that single... It's like a 7-minute fucking shot. Anyways, let me tell you about Talk to Me.
What streaming service is that one on?
You got to rent it right
okay.
now. I think... No. Why wouldn't we watch
Prime or Apple?
Fuck, dude. There's so much cable. I'll find it for you later. I can't remember where I watched it. But Shauna and me watched it. She's been watching every horror movie I say we should watch, which fucking kudos to her. It's Australian. It's okay. A24. A little Hereditary, a little Midsommar vibes, right?
Okay.
Takes place in this like buttfuck Australian town where this one kid finds this relic, and it's a relic of a hand.
In the Northern Territory?
Somewhere out, mate. And if you practice this seance and recite this thing and you grab the hand, you see someone from the other side. And then if you say to them, I let you in, the spirit jumps inside your body and overtakes you and talks to all your friends. And it's this party game, right? It's like you know.
It's like a Ouija board, but on fucking crack.
Yeah, it's like Candyman kind of thing. But like it steps it up a bit. Well, what happens is this one girl stays too long with the other side and brings that shit across.
Oh, yeah.
Fucks with her brain. It is a combination of like somewhat of a possession movie, but also at the same time, like rooted in like folklore and this weird palm. It's very Monkey Paw. It's not jump scary. It's not. It's creepy as fuck, and it's creepy because it's based in
like Blair Witch creepy, where you're like, you're imagining yourself in that situation and being so scared that your eyes are watering.
Like creepy as in like Evil Dead when you find a book, right?
Yeah,
and it's like, you know, the gateway to the other side. It's creepy like that. Like the hand is the gateway.
Yeah,
and the seance allows everything to happen, and then it's funny because as soon as they're like no more than 90 seconds, because after 90 seconds it takes over.
It's kind of like Flatliners, where they can only go to the other side for so long.
Oh, it's so key for Flatliners. Like, 100%.
And I'm talking about the original Flatliners.
Julia Roberts.
None of this fucking
reboot. Sutherland. Yeah. None of this fucking reboot shit.
Kevin Bacon.
Fuck.
Yeah.
And who? Oh, awesome.
Oliver Platt.
Oliver Platt. Thank you very much. I can't tell you where to watch it because I totally forget where it was right now. But
what's it called again?
Talk to Me.
Talk to Me, baby.
Just talk to me.
All right.
And like the cast, I don't know.
It's not a Jordan Peele movie. Like, what the fuck?
No, it's an A24.
Can't.
It's probably cheap as borscht. It's probably 20, 30 million to make this thing. I don't know.
It's funny. Wait. Okay, I just want to pause and I want you to say what you just said there.
It's cheap as borscht.
But how much money did you say?
Okay. Yes, what I just said.
$20 to $30 million, cheap as borscht. Isn't that fucking crazy? That's
a budget of a cheap movie.
Yeah.
Of an independent horror. Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's absolutely insane.
And it's not even going in the cinema. It's straight to fucking streaming.
I think this had a run. I think this had a really fast run. I just don't think.
Like what? Like 12 theaters or some shit?
Maybe. And like. Late, like middle September.
Was it at the Beverly Cinema?
I don't know.
Then it doesn't count.
Okay, fine. All right, Chinese Grubman over there. So watch it.
I don't think they show anything on digital at Quentin Tarantino's theater. I think it's 35 mil or 70 mil or nothing.
Yeah, because he's arrogant as fuck and is like, this is how you watch
films. No, that's the way you should watch films.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm just saying he's arrogant as fuck.
Yeah.
But that's why we love Quentin.
I think I'm starting to get into buying physical media again a little bit more, and I'll explain to you why. Because I really, the way it was actually originally produced, I want to see it that way. I don't want to see an adulteration down the fact. And that's
a bastardized child of a copy.
The streaming is great and bad at the same time. So one good thing is sometimes there'll be like a Blu-ray or a DVD would come out.
Yeah, yeah.
And there would actually be a glitch, an audio glitch or something like that. And that's something that could be fixed after the fact with a special edition release, which is a new physical release, or it could be fixed like in vitro, like in vivo, like with streaming. The downside though is that you also end up getting alterations of a movie. Like for instance, the original E.T.
Sure.
Right? The mom says, "Oh, you look like a little terrorist." And then when and that was on the VHS version. And when they re-released it on DVD, and I think like 2000 or something like that, they changed it to "You look like a little hobo."
You are doing this because you appreciate the cop, the original. You appreciate the intent.
I actually appreciate the lack of censorship.
I
think it's a censorship thing in my brain, but it's also I saw this thing where they showed scene differences between the VHS release of a Star Wars scene, the DVD release, and then the Blu-ray release, the 4K release, right?
And
they changed the clouds in all three of the scenes.
Why?
I don't know. I don't understand
it. Fourth time, why?
I don't fucking get it.
Can I read you something?
Yeah, yeah.
Plays in part. So yeah, this is from another podcast that I'm into. It's called There's Too Many Movies. Three guys. They're super funny.
There's Too Many Movies?
Too Many Movies is the name of the podcast.
That's good. I like it.
Great fucking name.
There is Too Many Fucking Movies.
They're out of Texas. I'll send you their shit after. Anyway, so like one of the guys on the show is a video editor, and this is like one of his funnier quotes. He says, "Do you want me as a video editor to bust out the bit rates on you? Because I can. The max bit rate for streaming, 15-20-30 megabytes a second. If you've got a decent connection and distance to the server, the average Blu-ray is 40 megabytes a second. The bit rate to your screen just sends twice as much data as a 4K Blu-ray, four times as much at 128 megabytes. When you watch a 4K digital stream, yes, the resolution is 3840 by 2160 or whatever the fuck. It doesn't matter how big the window is because inside the window, there's an amount of data. In order for it to be streamed, you're gutting something. The death of all streaming platforms is the buffering symbol. So what do you do to ensure that you never get that is a throttling bit rate? Physical media."
Mm-hmm. For the most part.
From all your time at Future Shop, like how you'd sell shit. Like those are the things that to the layman, you know, that's what you like, but you don't know how to explain what you like, and then that's why you buy.
Like I sold electronics for 14 years in a store, like commission electronics, and
Glengarry Glenn Ross motherfucker,
and people would always come in, they'd be like, "Oh, I'm pre-wiring this and that," and I'd be like, "You're building your house or you're pre-wiring?" I was like, "You need to run Ethernet to your fucking TV," and they'd be like, "Why? I got Wi-Fi," and I'm like, "Okay, do you like shit?" And they're like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, and that was like, and sometimes like this is like early days of like when Netflix was just starting, and I was like, "You've heard of Netflix, right?" And they're like, "Yeah, I watch it a little bit." And I said, "That will be everything." And they're like, "No, it won't." I'm like, "Yeah, it fucking will. Like, it's coming, right?" And sure enough, that's what it is.
Hello,
right?
Here we are.
And you know, you always hardwire everything if you can, or
best quality.
The other thing is that if you look at most televisions, even the top-notch TV from, like, say, Samsung right now, the only TVs that have Wi-Fi 6E in them are the 8K TVs.
Meaning
they have the absolute fastest availability of Wi-Fi.
Possible. You
know, possible.
Ever.
Possible. And the only reason they do that is if you actually had to stream 8K.
Because that's coming, or that's the attempt, essentially.
AK content is, I don't think, is ever going to be a huge thing. It's going to be a niche thing, right? You know, just like
arenas, stadiums, big screens, that big kind environments, of, concerts.
Like, I mean, movies are already being filmed in 8K, right? But I think eventually,
but when you dial down to 4,
all the IMAXs will eventually go to 8K because you're able to replicate true 70mm, right? So it, kind of think of it like that. Like even back in the day of film, 70mm wasn't a super common thing. It'd be a very rare thing that would be in certain cities and certain movies and those types of things. So that'll be the same with 8K. Eventually, what's going to happen is I think the movie theaters are all going to move to micro LED displays, which is what Samsung calls the wall. And they already have this at a few IMAX theaters in Europe and in Japan and Korea. And instead of having a projector that goes onto a screen, the whole fucking screen is our fucking TV panels all put together
AK
resolution. So that's really
seamless, right? Like you can't
seamless.
See the,
that's the future of TV. You know, the room can actually be brighter and the screen's just as bright, right? It's not affected. So there's a lot of benefits to it, right?
Yeah,
and the blacks are like fucking next level. It's incredibly bright.
The
like,
blacks are the blackest they've ever been.
Well, the HDR replication is fucking perfect, right? So you don't need don't need all the metadata crutches from things like Dolby Vision and HDR 10 Plus and all that kind of good stuff.
Did you hear that, listener? You just email the show if you're buying a new TV and you don't know how to wire it into your house.
Anyway.
So talk to me. Thanks for figuring out where we can watch it.
So are we going to get to the meat and the fucking potatoes of this or what?
Do you mean the Martin and the Scorsese? Yeah, okay, listener, so I mentioned at the top of the show, we as in me and Rob, have come up with our non-definitive, just a good old Wednesday top 10 list of where we think certain movies.
And I know you ranked you at first were ranking
I had ranked
it.
Mine originally, yeah, I did.
But I feel like that's really fucking hard, bro.
It is. I didn't feel good about it. I felt like I left some people out. I felt that it was too closed-minded. I felt because I like
I could definitely do my top five and my bottom five of the top 10.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, I feel like this with movies in general, it's kind of like,
it's unfair.
You know, people are like, what's your favorite, what's your three favorite movies? And I'm like, or what's your favorite movie? And I'm like today or this week or this month?
It is tough. So what we're going to do to start this off is I think a few words about The Man is probably, you know, let's break some bread over. So like what, you know what? What was your first?
I can't remember. Probably Taxi Driver.
Really? With your dad?
Yeah. It was like,
was that one of the ones you rented and like you?
Yeah, I probably watched it when I was like way too young, but yeah.
So like the story was kind of a miss and you were just like, who is this ultra violent,
I was just like, what the fuck is going on?
What kind of film is this, first of all?
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Yeah, I think it was, or it might have actually, no, yeah, that it was probably Taxi Driver. Yeah. Or maybe it was Raging Bull. I don't know.
Mine's on my list. Mine was The Color of Money, just because of how fucking cool it was to exist.
You know what?
Like,
that
was
actually probably that was probably mine too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I spent tons of my youth in the pool hall.
Yeah.
With friends.
Tom Cruise is so good in that movie.
Tom Cruise, Mary Stuart Mastrantino. Mm-hmm. I know that's not how you say it. Paul Newman, like everybody, and even the fact that it's
Paul Newman's so fucking cool as the old mentor. Like it's
whenever you old mentor somebody, it's perfect. It's taking people for their money. It's living on the road. The break shots, like the standard Martin Scorsese break shot, where he like cuts in really close and zooms out.
Yeah.
All that stuff was where I first learned about all that. It was just like how the movie was filmed, like how he would trace the cue ball into the breaking shot.
Yeah.
And like how he would follow it into the fucking pocket and like the break would then swing the camera to the door and someone would be walking into play pool. All those scenes super synonymous with like, truly like, and I think it was with my dad too. I mean, you watch a Martin Scorsese film with your father. You don't watch one with your mom, like I mean, unless it's
what are some things that you just love about Scorsese in general?
I love that even though he has obviously a niche, that he stays within the confines of like criminal stories, mafia stories, but then steps out and does crazy things like Hugo and biopics. Like he has a style; it's in everything. Right, it's a Quentin Tarantino foot shot. It's a Dutch angle from Sam Raimi. It's a specific style. But what it is about him,
voiceover storytelling.
I think that's where I fell in love with narration. To tell you the truth, having somebody guide you through a story, so that you don't like, it's not that you don't have to think hard. It's just this. He's taking you.
That's what a novel does. That's what a good novel does.
It gets and that I think the narration gets inside my head. So it takes me through Sam's character in Casino, right? It takes me through
Goodfellas.
It takes you through Goodfellas, right? It gives you the perspective of the lead character or characters, where everything else is you're watching it. Scorsese takes you into.
I love Goodfellas too because it's not just one person telling a story. It's him and her, right? Like. They'll trade off and tell different sides of the story at different times, right?
He is a master storyteller in that, even in the tiny little things that he wants you to see and pick up in the shot. And I don't know what it is about this little man who makes such big things happen. Like he just doesn't look like the product he makes to me.
Totally.
He never has.
Right? But I think that's what's so great about it.
He looks like a grandpa. He looks like someone who would own a shoe shop on the corner. He doesn't look like a master filmmaker who really, when you think about it, there's maybe 10 people left who are protecting cinema, and Scorsese's one of them.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I think I love about him, too, is he loves movies at the end of the day.
He's also from that master class from the 70s of those directors that are just like, you're just like, oh. The other thing that I love about him is... he is really one of the first and one of the best directors that is able to take a song and put it to a movie and make that almost make that song,
sacrificing dialogue for a song to tell you the story.
Totally. But also taking that song and almost immortalizing it more to the movie than the song by itself.
Can you hear me knocking?
Does that make sense to you?
Totally.
You know, but like
the extended version in Casino.
Yeah.
With the Casino walk and how that song builds and builds and builds and everything that's happening around that song.
Totally.
He has immortalized that song beyond it, even though, I mean, yeah, he's directed how many countless Rolling Stones documentary and concert films, which says something. But the point is that scene is useless without that song now.
Totally.
And to sit there and to really think about how the two balance each other out, a good narration and a good song over fucking movie, any day. Any day.
The other thing that I love about him is that he will find an actor.
Muse.
A muse, so to speak, and just fucking run with that person.
Who would that be? Who do you think his muse is? Let's talk about that for a second.
Maybe Mr. De Niro?
Mr. Pesci.
Or Mr. DiCaprio.
I think DiCaprio is the new De Niro. When it kind of plays, too, doesn't it?
In that, I also, he's also the new Nicholson, too.
DiCaprio's the new Nicholson?
Totally.
100%. I can't wait to see him. When he's season ticketing at fucking 85, oh my God, he'll be the new Nicholson. That's amazing. Oh my God, Jason Young. Oh my God, he's Nicholson now. He just hasn't got... I feel bad for Jack Nicholson. I read an article that he's not doing well. Like, he's locked up in the Hollywood.
You know what, though, man? He's lived a fantastic life.
He's done his duty for everybody.
So if he's, you know... I mean, it's just, people get old.
Want to build this 10?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's do this 10.
All right.
Let's go with his latest cinematic release, because I don't count The Irishman, because it was straight to streaming, and that's Wolf of Wall Street.
How shocked were you with the cocaine butthole scene? Like,
not at all.
No?
Not at all.
Did you know anything about the guy? Did you know anything about Jordan Belfort before you watched the movie?
Yeah,
really?
A little bit. Like, I knew.
Was he big in the world of?
No, I just knew that he had scammed his way into Wall Street and was a fucking party, like coke-filled party animal.
Did he scam his way in? I always feel that may have been an embellishment. Like,
he didn't scam his way in. I mean, he was a smart, talented guy, and I mean, the movie fucking shows you like what happened. And it was based on Jordan Belfort's book.
I know.
I think Jordan Belfort, I actually think he left some shit out that was so fucking crazy he didn't even put it in there. I think he left out a few things that were so fucking crazy that he would probably be prosecuted for them even after the fact.
I love that movie. I love everybody in that movie. I love Jonah Hill in that movie.
Jonah Hill's so fucking good in that movie.
The lewd crawl down the country club stairs into the Lamborghini and Scorsese doing the two versions.
It's a Ferrari, actually.
Sorry, my bad. Yeah. Ferrari. But him doing the two versions of what he thought happened and how it really went down. Mwah. So perfect.
So good.
The Matthew McConaughey cameo.
Steve Madden. What are you saying? Steve Madden.
But like, you know,
Matthew McConaughey, like doing the snoots. And I think that was right. And that was right after McConaughey had done Dallas.
Because he was pretty
gone.
He
was so fucking thin in that, right?
Oh my God. Yeah. He was like maybe 130 pounds.
No, he had to be more than that. But he was thin for sure. He's not his usual robust 180, 190 kind of figure.
Like, I do have Wolf of Wall Street on my preemptive list here.
I watch it all the time. And I mean, for me, I've been in sales my entire adult life, so it just resonates with me. It's a fun fucking movie. It's drug fueled. It's fun, and it's fucking hilarious. It's so funny.
It's a raunchy comedy. It's a lot of fun, and it's a Scorsese movie, but fuck, there's a lot of zingers in that movie.
There's a ton, man. Plus, it also gets dark there for a while, and it makes you realize, like, you know, you sometimes you're like riding this fucking high, but then all of a sudden the bottom's got to come. So there's a
lesson to be learned.
There's a lesson. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like an Aesop's fucking fable almost in a way.
If you snort it, you will probably lose it. Or something to that effect.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because it's on my list too, I'm willing to let The Wolf of Wall Street, I'm not even going to, I'll just put mine, great minds think alike. fair to say.
Dude, right. It's a great fucking movie.
I'm not saying it's a bad movie at all. None of these, I can't say any of these movies are really bad. I can say some of them maybe didn't speak to me or some of them weren't as interesting to me. Like Mean Streets, I know it's a great film, but like it, I saw it with my dad once and I've never wanted to go back to it because it didn't live with me. But seeing Casino for the first time.
Oh, let's talk about Casino.
All right. The Sam Rothstein dancers. That is one of the
when he had his talk show.
And he's like, I will fight these charges like against the Nevada Gaming Commission.
Like on local, like fucking,
like Vegas
TV,
local fucking TV, like strip TV or some shit like that. And he's got those big, we're the 8th Rothstein dancers on the 8th Rothstein hour.
Everything's made of polyester. Like it's so great. Yeah,
it's truly, truly. We were talking about the song over the whole scene thing, like the "Can You Hear Me Knocking?" The Rolling Stones.
It's so good,
moment.
Man.
It's so badass.
And he's explaining everyone's role in the casino and how it all works together. And fuck, it's so good.
Everybody is watched by the eye in the sky, and little Nicky Santoro, right? Like, just see, it is the callback to them being together again, right?
I'm
sure about that.
Yep.
Like, not since Goodfellas.
Yep.
So you've got that aspect. They're still playing the same two characters. It's almost like those two characters move to Vegas, right? Like that's why that's so easy to digest.
I guess so.
The true story is Ace and Sharon Stone and the insanity. Like
they're not the same character. Actually, I disagree with that. I'd say Pesci's characters are similar, but I don't know, man. I feel De Niro's is
he's more of a
he's the straight he's the straight guy. It's the straight man in the casino. In the other one, he kind of is, but he's not.
Well, okay, think about it like this.
Like when he's playing Jimmy in fucking Goodfellas, he's still off the fucking hook sometimes.
Oh, don't get me wrong. He's still a ball of fucking insanity in Goodfellas. Like, he's not as level-headed as Sam Rothstein.
Like, Sam Rothstein's not a bad guy.
No, he's just friends with bad guys.
He's friends with bad guys, and he just knows how to make fucking money and wants to do his thing. And turns a blind eye to it.
He kind of is the same where if you imagine how he wants the casino to be perfect and not look like it's associated with crime, when he gives Buddy shit for buying the coat after the Lufthansa heist.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, put that shit away. That's heat, man. Like, they both, maybe they're not tempered the same way.
But Jimmy was just... older and mature.
That's true. He was the older of the three.
The other two were like fucking young kids. Even though they don't look that young, that you just got to remember, like they're just because the movie takes place at different times, right?
Very true. Yeah.
Right. So you know, Jimmy's always like 10 years older than them.
Which, like, you don't like you see with Ray, but I don't see with like Pesci and De Niro always look the same age to me, no matter what they're doing. Like, no matter what's going on. But yeah, just Casino and the
story. Also, I don't think Pesci's acting. I think he's just being himself in those movies.
Pesci just shows up. Just put the hair on, put the suit on. I'll just be Pesci, right?
Well, I think Pesci's actually connected.
You really think
so? That's what they think. I've heard that several times.
I would hope to Christ that he's a made guy.
I don't think he's a made guy, but I think there's definitely...
He's friends.
I don't know. Who knows?
He's a hanger. He was like Frank Sinatra. Right,
probably.
Like
totally.
They say, Frank was connected. They could never really prove it, but I mean, your Vegas connects.
Yeah.
And like speaking of Vegas, I love a movie about Vegas. So when he was tackling Vegas really for the first time, like Vegas is a little bit it's not in Goodfellas at all because it all takes place on the East Coast. I'm confusing Godfather. Sorry, but like I love a Vegas movie. My mom raised me on Vegas. Vegas is one of my favorite places to go. So seeing a whole 2.5 fucking hours of like the insanity.
Sharon Stone's really good.
She's so killer.
She's great in that movie.
When she loses her shit and freaks out in the third, right? When she's just like strung out with Jimmy Woods, like running with the daughter, coming back to Sam, begging to let him back, and going like she is on all six cylinders, fucking going nuts in those scenes.
The one other scene that stands out for me in that movie is when they go into the field. And they're like, and they're beating him with the aluminum baseball bat,
and that sound
resonates through the speakers,
choking through the blood in the fucking grave.
Fuck,
it's horrible,
dude. It's so on point though.
I think they
capture that so well.
I think I've watched Casino the most.
Wow. Okay.
Like, it's a great background movie for me because each song tells you where you are, like you're paced. I think De Niro's in his prime. I think he's. I
would agree.
Really think that he's found himself. Like that's late '40s. I think he is late '40s, early '50s.
Yeah, because when was that movie? 96, 95 ish.
Somewhere in the mid '90s range.
Yeah. It was after Goodfellas. It's after Cape Fear.
Yeah. Like he's getting bigger roles, and I mean he's constantly a Scorsese. He's a Scorsese paycheck away at all times, right? You know, look at Killers of the Flower Moon coming.
Yeah.
But I think it was. It wasn't a first, but it was the one that taught me what to look for in a Scorsese film. Like
totally.
Why they are the way they are, what they do for you, why you like the way he tells stories. Mm-hmm. All okay. So we got two. Are you good with Casino or do you want a challenge?
No, fuck up. Casino's on my list.
All right.
Okay, the next one for me is Goodfellas.
So early. Okay. You're not going to save that one for, all right, fine. You can blow it. Blow your wad all over the fucking Goodfellas floor. What?
I'm excited. I want to talk about it.
Do it. All right. You just can't wait. That's fine.
Motherfucking helicopters.
You're a funny guy. You almost had me.
My single favorite meme or GIF or whatever the fuck it is. Is when they're laughing in the fucking bar.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. Like, fuck, that scene is so fucking good.
I want to fucking kill this guy.
I also love when she's narrating and it's all
Lauren
about
Brocco, right?
And it's all about when he takes her out to the club and they go
through the back door
and it's coming through and it's one and it's one continuous shot and then he comes in and he says hi to everybody and then they put the table out in the front and add the two things and they sit down
and the guy comes over and sings to her, right?
Like that fucking scene is so fucking good, dude.
Those long tracking shots that he does, he's a master at the fucking long.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's
he created those. Like everyone's emulating that after now.
When you say trio, like a movie trio, I mean, there's a lot of trios that really stick out. Mm-hmm. That none are coming to mind right now. But I think if I just said name your favorite movie trio in a room and we threw that in, 10 people would say Goodfellas. Just makes sense. They give you a little bit. You have the budgeting. Wannabe mafia guy that you as the audience are interested in because you're interested in the mafia, right? Then you've got the crazy fucking psycho guy who's willing to go to the mattresses, as
totally,
they say.
Totally.
Then you have the more refined older one who's looking out for everybody who reports to Polly. Mm-hmm. Those three guys kind of bridge a lot of gaps for a lot of different people who enjoy that movie because, like, Tommy.
Sopranos wouldn't.
Tommy goes and has fucking dinner with his mom after.
Yeah.
And the knife makes its way back into the fucking table. And that's Scorsese's mother. That's Scorsese's mom.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
And that's them talking. That's the beauty of him knowing, all right, just get into character. Mm-hmm. All right, go on set. Just sit down and kind of talk it out. And then you get this beautiful dinner scene with Scorsese's mom and the boys after they've just chopped a guy up. And that chopping scene. Oh, that chopping scene with the shot when they're like the silhouette of them chopping the bodies up and they're all just covered in blood and puking.
Well, then they got to fucking bury the body. Then later they find out that they're fucking doing a development there and they got to go dig the fucking body up. Yeah. And they're digging the body up and they're puking and like you're just like.
Oh, Henry.
And all I'm thinking to myself is it's a good thing that didn't happen in the fucking 2000s because DNA.
And when he beats the shit out of the guy who's fucking with his girlfriend.
Oh, dude.
When he walks over across the street and bangs him on the head with the butt of the gun.
Yeah. That's right.
Like you just
the guy is working the guy like the, working on his Camaro.
Yeah, that douchebag.
Yeah, you know what? The guy from the tennis club, right?
Yeah, from the tennis club.
If you were to say, what are the three movies that come to mind when somebody says, "Hey, have you ever seen a Martin Scorsese movie?"
What are the three?
The average person, I think the average person says, Goodfellas, Casino, Departed,
100%.
And what and
biggest,
all
very big,
all
very,
three of those are so gangster crime centric.
I wonder how much money Goodfellas made. It doesn't strike me as something.
I don't think it was huge. I think it was maybe like $80 million.
I think he really started to become commercially successful with stuff like
Goodfellas
Casino and Departed.
was more successful after the fact. Like I never saw
cult
the theater,
classic,
but I saw I watched the fuck out of it in high school on VHS.
Well, and like you know how you've got like your gangster guys, right? You got your Tony Montanas.
Yeah,
these guys were not as well. They weren't as hard as Tony, but they were Teflon, right? Yeah. Like I love how he takes you into the world of organized crime,
yeah,
because it makes you want to be Henry. It makes you want to run money. It makes, but like he entices you. Yeah. He romances you into the world of organized
crime. But again, it's just like Wolf of Wall Street. It shows you all the glitter and where he gets and then his fucking fall.
Yeah.
Right.
Just doing your own fucking product. And then
doing a lot of it. And then worrying about helicopters.
And then hiding it in a red hat of the kid who babysits for your fucking niece or something. Like his plan in the end, you're just watching, you're like, this is destined to fail, because he's like, I had to make the marinara sauce and then I had to go get it to the fucking,
and I had to use the fucking razor blade to cut the fucking cut the fucking garlic. Okay,
the first time I saw Goodfellas, I walked in, I thought that was the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
So when Paulie's doing the whole like slicing the garlic razor thin and that's the prison scene, I was like, what movie is this and what prison are we in? Like the guy starts throwing out fucking lobsters and salami and you're just like, what is it? That's what hooked me.
Yeah.
It wasn't even, I didn't even know what the movie was about. And then I was like, oh, let's go back an hour and a half to the beginning of all of this.
Yeah.
And no, it made it fucking sexy and it made it cool. And you're right. Like high school boys, we gravitate towards that shit.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I can't. I don't even want to try. I'm so afraid to say stuff because I'm afraid for someone to actually write in and be like, you guys know what the fuck you're talking about. So I'm treading fucking lightly over here. Yes, I agree to everything you say.
Okay, what's your next one? What's your next pick?
Let me make this list here. Some Goodfellas makes it to the list. All right. All right. I'll go tit for tat. I'll go Departed.
Fuck, I love Departed. Fucking love that movie.
That's your mother.
Mark Wahlberg is so fucking funny.
Fucking,
and
I love my father.
I love him and Martin Sheen's kind of how they play off each other. You know what I mean?
Oh my
come
God.
On, Captain. Come on, Captain. You know?
Do you think we're cunts? We would not be good at a job if we were cunts.
And the best thing is that I know that Scorsese, when he read the script, probably saw Mark Wahlberg in that scene and called him up and said, listen, I want you to do this, right?
Just be this guy.
But Matt Damon and fucking and Leonardo DiCaprio
are not a fucking
good. And Jack Nicholson is the fucking best villain.
Do you know the story about the gun?
No.
So the scene when Nicholson's like, fucking rat. You know, that scene when they're sitting there and he was like, listen, if I was a rat, you know, and he's trying to talk his way out of it. So in that scene, you hear a thunk on the ground. And the thunk on the ground is a not loaded gun that Jack Nicholson smuggled on set and pulled it out. And DiCaprio's reaction to seeing that gun on set and wondering, A, how did he get it here? B, is it loaded? And C, what's he going to do with it? You have a genuine shock and scare out of DiCaprio.
Shut
because
the fuck up.
That gun wasn't supposed to be there.
What?
Yeah, it's a prop gun, but nonetheless.
I also love the scene where they're like he's like smashing open his fucking cast to see if there's a fucking wire in it.
Some fucking money out of it.
And then he's like, he's like, you know, stop doing fucking coke deals with your shithead cousin.
What are you drinking? Cranberry juice. What are you on your period? Like there's so many little things about that movie that always curtail back to Nicholson. Like,
and I like that it's in Boston too,
right?
Because it's like a snapshot of a different.
Could have been Jersey, could have been New York, could have been Chicago. But
there was something about it being fucking Boston.
The Whitey Bulger aspect. Mm-hmm. Like this is his Whitey Bulger version.
Totally,
right?
Totally.
I mean, Black Mass with Johnny Depp is the true story of Bulger, which is even crazier, but so I love how he brought in like the sociopathic aspect, which Damon, I don't know if you've ever seen this video of Damon explaining, is like, you know the scene when he's on the beach with Frenchie and they shoot the two people and it falls over, so
he's like, oh, I felt weird.
Yeah, okay. So on paper that scene is Frenchie and Jack shoot the couple and then Jack leans over, he's like, you know, we could cut the camera here, or I could say something like, she fell funny, because that means I've done this before. And they roll again, and he's like, you know, if you leave the camera rolling, and I say, hey, why don't I fuck her again before we bury her, and then bring the hatchet out, that's really dark and scary. But if you leave the camera rolling, it just keeps going. But that was the brilliance of Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, yeah.
Was like, so the "she fell" funny line is him like
ad-libbing
and adding it for, because like that like that line is such a throwaway. You're like, "she fell funny," but when you think about it, it's like Francis really has shot enough people that they fall one way.
Totally.
It's like flipping a coin, right? Eventually, it's going to be tails.
Well,
eventually,
and not only has he killed a lot, but the two of them together have killed that many people.
Those two?
Like, they're thick as thieves. Like, they've got decades between the two.
Bodies between the two of
them.
You
know what I mean? Yeah.
No, and The Departed finally got Leo some gold, right? I believe it was The Departed that he won for.
Was it?
It was the Oscar he got.
No, no, it wasn't.
What was it?
It was
shit.
It was the
You're
one
right.
where he's like the guy that gets mauled by the bear. Why am I bringing?
No,
farting?
He didn't get an Oscar for The Revenant.
Yeah, he did.
And then no.
Yes.
No. Fact check me. I really can't say anything else about The Departed that hasn't already been said, though.
Anyway. The Revenant, Best Actor.
Really?
2016. Yeah, Departed. He was nominated for Departed, but he didn't get it.
That's right.
And everyone said that he was robbed and blah blah blah.
Sad Leo meme. That's why I'm confusing the fact that it was
no Revenant was when he won.
Yeah,
that was like the big thing.
Yeah, man, that bear attack.
Dude, that movie's fucking insane.
I love that movie.
But anyway, we're talking about Scorsese here.
Yeah. So Departed. I mean,
it's so good. And that final scene where the rat's on the fucking so good.
Well, and like when Wahlberg's in the apartment in the end, and he's just staring at him, and he's like, listen, and he tries to beg for his fucking life.
No, he doesn't. He
shoots him. He begs for his life in the elevator when they're going down, when DiCaprio finally catches him.
Yeah.
And he's like, just kill me now, man.
Just kill me now. You know, and he goes, and when he walks in with the groceries, he goes, all right.
Yeah. Phew. Fuck. It's such
because he knew it was coming.
I'm always of the mind that we don't need a romantic story to happen. Like, we can have a man and a woman doing a thing and they don't have to have a romantic connection because it's just so long and used and boring. So the love interest with, I think it's Vera Farmiga.
Yeah.
And how both of them were in her orbit.
Totally. That's a love triangle there.
That love triangle made that movie better.
It totally did.
Right. And both of them seeing her for the same thing, but for different reasons. Like, there's a lot of depth in that.
It also has kind of almost like a Heat interplay where you've got the two main characters. They do little like almost touch points, but then they really only interact with each other at the end.
It's a web. Do you want a challenge or do you want to let this be?
No, I fucking love that movie.
All right, fair enough.
My next one is going to be
Choose Wisely, my son. Like that scene in Indiana Jones where you got to find the right cup.
Taxi Driver.
Okay. Ahead of its time. Part of the, what was it, 78, 79?
76.
77,
so like, yeah.
As the ramp
Jodie, above. Jodie Foster was like 13 when they made, when
Cybill
she shot
Shepherd
it.
Cybill Shepherd too?
Right? Oh, yeah.
The fucking, I mean, I was told, hey, there's
that's
this
when Cybill, that's when Cybill Shepherd was like a smoke show.
Yeah. She was also super young too.
Yeah.
What, like, do you think?
And like, there's that scene where he's practicing like the gun coming out of the thing. Yeah.
You talking to me?
Yeah. It's just it. I mean, I haven't seen it in years. I think it deserves a revisit for me for sure.
Table book up there if you ever want to.
But I mean, it's just. I think it's the movie that really put him on the map.
It's when we remember when we talked about like a filmmaker's first, right?
And it's a movie that put De Niro on the map. De Niro won best actor for it.
It's like at its core. Or not even on its skin. It's just the fall of a man in America, right? Like going into madness and being caught in a fucking loop of, is this reality? Is this not reality? Who am I? Who am I not? Like questioning your own identity in a world you don't understand or feel that you're a part of. Taking women to porn theaters for dates. You're just like it's such a hard. It's not an easy watch.
No.
And he plays.
It's awkward.
It is a hard, awkward watch. And it's
at like probably New York at its worst in the 20th century.
Right. A lot of crime, a lot of prostitution, a lot of drug running.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Every New York cop movie that you see in the 70s always has like a bad fucking problem in New York.
Popeye Doyle.
No shit. But like it. Yeah. It has to be there because it's part of who he is as a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. You can't be like, let's talk about Scorsese and let's throw these 10 films out there that are quintessentially him and not have the one that he found his fucking, you know, his groove on, essentially.
Did he win Best Director for that too?
You'd have to check.
Well, that's back when the Oscars actually mattered.
Yeah, no, Taxi Driver isn't challenging, but that's also true. when Billy Crystal hosted them, right? You remember those days?
So Taxi Driver, so De Niro got a nominee. It got Best Picture nominee, Best Supporting, Best Original Score nominee. One of the finest movies of the 70s did not win any major awards, Oscar, BAFTA, or Golden Globe.
They didn't want to give it to him because of him being such a new filmmaker, I bet.
I think it was also because it was violent in a different type of way.
And it had child-related themes in it that maybe would have been questionable for the Oscars at the time. The prostitution aspect, the porn aspect, like stuff
not for,
like...
Not for Hollywood, though.
Well, no, not for their pastime. I'm talking about for their industry. Come on now. Yeah, no, Taxi Driver has to be here. Okay, I'm going to go obscure here. I'm going to go with After Hours.
Never seen it.
I know you haven't. And
that's
and
the one with Rosanna Arquette?
Rosanna Arquette. Fuck, what the hell is his name? Catherine O'Hara is also in it. The dad from Home Alone is in it. It's just a calamity of fucking errors that goes wrong. Like, this dude is this, like, data analyst who ends up going to read a novel at a cafe, and he meets Patricia Arquette, and they're reading the same book. Then she invites him back over to his place, and she's kind of weird, and then he leaves, and she's crying. Like, all these things kind of happen, and it's this one long night in New York.
This sounds like, terrible.
It's not, though. I'm not doing a good job selling this to you. Like, if you watch it, you will not want to stop watching it. It's art house as fuck. It's
super super character driven, super dialogue driven. It could be a play.
It would feel like a play if you really could do a play on this for sure. There's like 12, 15 characters throughout the entire.
If there was more
Cheech and Chong in it, for fuck's sakes, they're art thieves who are stealing a Paris of plastic.
If there was more gunplay in it, Tarantino could have directed it.
Tarantino would have just made it a bloodbath, but it's weird. It's fun. It's about a dude trying to like court a woman, but at the same time, like his money flies out of the taxi cab window, so he has no money to pay for the cab. Then he gets stuck watching this dude's apartment for some reason. This other woman wants to rescue him. Like, he just wants to get home. He just wants to get out of fucking Soho and get the fuck home. And it was something I think I showcase 12 o'clock TV movie
sure.
one night, right?
Yeah.
Like, and then I'm like, who made this thing? And then I was like, Scorsese made this thing? And I kept watching it. And
that's
here
cool.
I am. I give it a watch every couple months, just background shit, but I love it.
I would put Shutter Island over that.
How shocked were you? That was a Sixth Sense ending.
It was.
Did you see it coming, first of all?
No.
At all?
It's an ending like the first time you see The Game.
Yeah, right.
Sixth Sense.
Saw.
Shutter Island. Saw is a good example. Yeah. You know, there's those
Jaws.
There's those movies that you see. And the funny thing is, like, when I rewatched Shutter Island a few years ago with Michelle.
Yeah.
And I had actually forgotten
how good
the end. I forgot. I'd forgotten that.
So you had another mind blown.
I'd forgotten that he was the fucking, the patient. He was the patient.
The whole thing was an elaborate ruse.
And I had forgotten about that. I was like, fuck, I totally forgot. And, you know, so it was kind of good in that respect. It's almost like I'd forgotten about it.
That doesn't happen to me often, but when it does, I know the joy you get out of that, because
Mark Ruffalo is super good in that.
He is such a good supporting character.
So weird.
What's the matter, boss? How you feeling, boss? And it doesn't have a direction. You really, like, it is one of those, like, the ending is the big reveal. Wow, I'm in the end. But, like, throughout the entire thing, it's like, what are we actually doing? Are we finding out what's bothering DiCaprio, or are we looking for this woman? Like, what is the objection?
And
here?
it's kind of like, you're like, is this a film noir? And it's kind of going that way. But then the twist is that he's the patient. And you're just like, what the fuck? Like,
it's all science.
Like, it hurts your brain. And then
you want to go back and watch it again.
And you want to go back and analyze each of the different scenes and look at it from the perspective of, oh, he's not a cop. He's the patient. And that's why they were weird like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, oh.
Like how they never let him be and they were always by him and why they had to sleep in the same room. Like there's so many pickup clues the second and third watch. And the perspective switch is fun too, because like now you're watching Ruffalo act a way that you weren't paying attention to, but now creates a hold. It's like a choose your own adventure all over again on Shutter Island.
Yeah.
John C. Carroll, the big guard from the brother from Drew Carey.
Yeah.
I love him in anything I can get my hands on him in. Max von Sydow is the doctor.
Wasn't the guy that played Buffalo Bill in
Yeah, he was one of the other
the orderly guys.
I think so.
Yeah.
We're forgetting about the fuck's his name? Like Gandhi?
Oh, yes. Ben Kingsley.
Yes. That's yes. the one. Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yeah.
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 Great cast.
Awesome cast.
I will let...
Good feel, like late 40s, just after World War II, you know, and again, just fits perfectly in that double indemnity kind of like film noir feel. That
all right. Yeah, I concede. You get okay. You get Shutter Island.
Okay.
Shutter Island was also on my list, too.
I'm going to go Gangs of New York.
It made my list, and it actually stayed on it. Yeah, no, I did keep it. Yeah, you know what? Like, really fun story. Really fun way mm-hmm. to tell a part of history that a lot of people don't think about. Like, yeah, everybody came to America, but did they all get along? And did they form gangs in the boroughs called the Dead Rabbits? Like, what was that era like of coming to America and trying to prosper as you heard tales?
It's also
across the sea.
Showing a time of New York when it's really dirty.
Yeah.
And
chamber pots
and,
being dumped in the fucking streets.
And it felt kind of like, I always think of like London like that, but not New York like that.
London,
but, I think we need to remember that New York
was
disgusting too.
Satellite London, per se.
Yeah. 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 I mean, and like Daniel Day-Lewis is, dude, come on.
Did he get sick on gangs or he got sick on Lincoln? And he's like, I'm not going to the hospital. They wouldn't have this when I...
Lincoln.
Was it Lincoln that
yeah.
he didn't... Fuck. Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah, no.
Get the leeches. I will be bloodlet.
It's a great revenge tale. You gotta love Cameron Diaz. Like, she just fucking kills it in her little, like, thief role, and the two of them just...
The Butcher.
So much, the Butcher. Bill the Butcher.
Bill the Butcher.
Bill the Butcher. And, like, what was it? John C. Reilly?
The natives.
The natives and the dead rabbits.
Yeah.
But when he goes underneath the into those dark tunnels to heal up, and then John C. Reilly comes down to him after, and Gleason, oh, fucking, what's his dick? Not Domhnall. Domhnall's the son. Gleason, the redheaded judge guy with the club who ends up dying.
Oh, yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
There's
so
many good side characters in that movie.
There
and
is.
And it is a fucking epic takeoff. Like you.
Oh, Liam Neeson's in it.
Liam Neeson's
like,
daddy.
Like Brendan Gleeson
That's
is the
it.
Monk.
Thank you, Brendan
the
Gleeson.
The monk.
The monk with the fucking, the club. But,
and you know what? Honestly, Cameron Diaz actually isn't terrible.
She's great in it.
Yeah.
She carries her own.
I think that's literally the only drama she's ever done.
Well, Charlie's Angels was kind of dramatic. Just totally fucking kidding. Yeah, no, I'll give you Gangs for sure.
It's a fun fucking movie.
We all like comeuppance, and watching someone who's just this dog of a human, mm-hmm. this beast of a fucking human, watching him get hacked up at the end.
Movie would not have been as good though without Daniel Day-Lewis. He carries that movie.
I agree.
He carries every scene he's in. DiCaprio's good in it, but he isn't the level.
Bill
that
Butcher
he...
is the movie. DiCaprio and Will just shows up, and this is all happening around. Because really, it's him. It's Diaz's character. It's his buddy, mm-hmm. who's like they're both stealing together. Like it's a group of
yeah.
people who are all experiencing life.
It's a coming of age tale.
It's a coming of age tale. And then when they
but
like,
a wee Irishman.
But when they pan out at the end and you see the five boroughs,
I'm escaping the potato famine.
No, but when they pull back and it's New York
yeah.
today,
yeah,
like
yeah.
And, I mean, Scorsese's city is New York, right?
Yeah.
Like he is
totally, man.
That's,
totally,
that's his fucking town.
Okay, what's the next one for you?
I love a biopic. I love
The Aviator.
Biopic. I have to say The Aviator.
You love The Spruce Goose?
The Spruce Goose, which now we know is The Hercules. I love...
It's a good movie.
I love that era of Hollywood, the golden age of Hollywood,
yeah.
right? The 20s through the 40s,
yeah.
watching that rise, the industrious age of America. Hell's Angels, Scarface, like...
Cate Blanchett's good.
Oh, she kills it.
Yeah.
She kills it as fucking Katharine Hepburn in that movie.
Yeah.
And then, what's her face?
Kate
Beckinsale. Also, everybody who shows up in that movie. Jude Law's in that movie for a minute.
Oh, yeah, I forgot John C. Reilly's
in it. Data's in that movie. Alec Baldwin
Alan
plays.
Alda.
Yeah, no, everybody shows up for that.
Ian Holmes in there.
Ian Holmes is the weatherman who's yeah. trying to figure out where the clouds are for when they're filming Hell's Angels.
Yeah.
I think that's DiCaprio is bringing it in. I really believe... I'm going to put the milk in the right hand. I'm going to put the milk in the right hand. Like quarantine. I get it. I have to live and die by the aviator. I'm sorry. It's a fun movie. It's a timepiece. Everything is great. It's not as Scorsese as Goodfellas or Casino. Like,
no, it's kind of a move away from his huge.
It is. And I think that's why I enjoyed it a little bit more. It's the same people that I know I'll come to like in a film of his, but it's enough. Do you feel it challenging or?
You know what? Honestly, man, I mean, it wasn't on my list, but the more I'm thinking about it, it's actually a pretty good movie.
It has a thing to it.
And you know what? I mean, I think the other movie that I had on my list was Cape Fear. I would take Cape Fear off and add that one.
Yeah. No,
I don't get me wrong. I liked Cape Fear. It was a good it's better than the original. De Niro was definitely good and creepy in it. You know, Nick Nolte plays a good, like, you know, crazy dad. But yeah, I'll agree. I think that should be on there.
All right. You're next.
Raging Bull.
Yeah. Again, making a black and white movie about a boxer's life.
That's the one De Niro won Best Picture for.
That is the one he won Best Picture for. And the POV shots in that movie, like that,
yeah.
That's playing with film technique. Like, well,
it's also black and white.
But it has this feeling like you're there in the fight with him, right? And playing Jake and having to beef up. Like, I could be wrong, but I think like some of the professionals in the boxing world have been like, if De Niro was to have like stepped into the ring at the time, he could have actually contended. He could have been a contender.
Really?
Yeah. And I think he had a couple like he didn't have televised fights or even like promoted fights, but I think he fought and sparred a little bit with some guys out of his league to really understand what a punch felt like, just to get into that character. And like, just it's a fancy Rocky is what it is, right? It's a different boxer story. It's almost in the same vein as like Cinderella Man, right? Where like you've got the underdog. You're not telling the story about boxing so much. You're telling the story of the character. And he does a really good job as using boxing as the fucking vessel.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, like it just, I've seen it once, just to say I've seen it.
I haven't seen it in years. It's probably been 25 years since I've seen it. So honestly,
I don't
remember it as well as I should.
It's someone flexing. Right.
Yeah.
You can't ignore that.
And I definitely saw it on cable. Like, it wasn't rented, so I saw it with commercials. Like, so it's not the same.
When you get an entertainer who gives you like exactly what you want, unadulterated, and it's their pure creativeness, you can't discount that amongst like the popular.
I also feel like that was at that time where De Niro kind of had that run, right? He did Taxi Driver. He did Deer Hunter.
Oh yeah, Michael Cimino.
He did, and then he did Raging Bull, right? And
Deer Hunter's insane. People are like, that's a war movie? I'm like, you have no idea how much of a war movie that movie wars. Like,
it's not Apocalypse Now, it's not Platoon.
No,
it's got a few flashback scenes, but you know, the majority of it is,
it's about PTSD more than it's about the Vietnam War.
It totally is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The very hard effects of war torn men.
Yeah.
I'll close this off here. This was my first. This was
a great billiard shot.
A great billiard shot. It's so cool. It makes playing pool cool. It makes being in a pool hall cool. It's a story of grifters, of con men, of
it's a great Tom
hustlers.
It's a good Tom Cruise movie without being a Tom Cruise movie. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he's a supporting actor in that. Like it's all about, and like, what's the original, the black and white that he did of it? Because the there's
like a short.
Jackie Gleason, I think, is in the original, because the guy who Paul Newman plays is a character from another movie that was made.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
I can't remember. The Hustler. That's it. That's the name of the movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
the
yeah.
The Hustler is when Paul Newman was Tom Cruise's age.
Okay.
And The Color of Money is Scorsese bringing the Hustler character back. Eddie, whatever his name is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like a good con movie. Mm-hmm. The Sting is also one of my favorite con movies. Also a Paul Newman movie, right?
Sting's good.
But like I said, growing up pool halls, like I can't not throw that out there because it is my first exposure to Scorsese. Challenge or
no? I agree. I think it's
great.
Thank
you for giving me that.
You know, it's funny too, because I'd forgotten about that movie, but when we were chatting before the show, you brought it up, and I was like, "Fuck yeah, that's a fucking dope ass movie."
You don't like look at the screenshot over here before we go, right? Like, Last Temptation of Christ is on here. The King of Comedy, we're ignoring.
Last Temptation of Christ is a good movie as well too.
It is.
It's very controversial. You know, he ate a lot of shit for it.
What, you know what? I haven't seen it in so long. What was it that he pissed off people? Was it?
I think it's...
Did he piss off the Catholic Church? Or
I think it was more just the fact that the book pissed off the Catholic Church.
Okay.
And then he's making the movie adaptation of a movie that they fucking hate.
Yeah, because it doesn't paint Jesus in a good light. It paints him as more of a human.
Because it talks about how his last thoughts were not this, like, what you would think Jesus would think about as his last thoughts when he's before he gets crucified.
You've got The Last Waltz, which is the documentary about the band, Robbie Robertson and all them, I think, that he did. Like,
okay.
He's done a lot of music stuff, too, that he doesn't get a lot of credit for, like the Rolling Stones stuff that he did. The episode of Vinyl you said that he directed?
Yeah, he directed. Right? He's directed some music videos.
Like, as much as we like to keep to the big screen because we're cinema snobs. Did you see Silence?
Silence is that one with Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver, right?
Yes, yeah.
I need to watch that. I wonder if it's any good.
Like, you can't really...
Hugo's pretty good, too. It's a fun movie.
Never saw it.
It's just a fun kids movie, man.
I think that's the movie he directed for his kid. I was saying something else earlier, but I think that's the one his kid
You said Shark Tale, and I was it certainly was not Shark Tale.
I think he was just a producer credit on that one.
Yeah.
I feel good about this.
Yeah, so do I.
Do you feel that you haven't alienated too much of yourself, or
no? I think we hit on the key ones. I mean, there's going to be people that disagree with us, and there's going to be people that are like, I really like this one, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's our fucking list, and that's all that matters.
Exactly. And if you do disagree, no, hey, he's right. Who fucking cares? It's our list. We made it for you. But if you have one of your own, if you'd like to share, we're more than happy to listen. Leave us a voicemail. It's the easiest way to like tell us your opinion on this shit, and then we get to play it on the show.
I think the best thing that's going to come out of doing this podcast today is that I'm going to go revisit some of these movies.
Me too.
And I'm going to go.
I'm going to watch Cape Fear for sure.
And I'm going to go look. I'm going to watch a few movies of his that I actually haven't seen.
Watch After Hours.
All right.
Give it a spin. All right. And I'll do. I'll do Hugo.
Yeah, sure. I own Hugo. If you want to borrow it.
Sweet. Physical media, right?
Yeah.
Well, listener, thank you for tuning into another episode. If this is your first time, thank you so much for listening all the way through. If you'd like to follow the show, there's a bunch of ways to do that in the show notes. You can follow all of our socials. Hey, how's your mother? Thanks for tuning into another episode, listener. I've been Michael Petro.
I'm Rob Strachan.
Watch all the movies. See you next week.
If you have any problems, dial information. Thank you for calling.